Whoops, I think I'll jump in there. This is Lynn Osgood from Austin, Texas, and telling about the Forklift Dance Works project. And so my name is Lynn. I'm the executive director of a nonprofit organization called Civic Arts. We work at the intersection of arts and community development processes. And today I'll be presenting the results of a research that was done with Forklift Dance Works, an arts organization in Austin, Texas, run by artistic directors Allison Orr and Chrissy Marty, and talking specifically about their My Park, My Pool, My City project. We were very fortunate to have support from the National Endowment for the Arts for a 3-year research cycle, which allowed us to be embedded with the arts organization as researchers, as they co-created performances with 3 different East Austin communities over a period of 3 years. So Forklift as an arts organization traditionally works with city staff. They create performances about the everyday life of the work that people do. For these performances, they bring in Grammy Award-winning musicians and lighting artists, but most importantly, the performers of these practices, of these performances, are the staff themselves, the staff and their equipment. Thousands of people come to see the shows, and perhaps the most famous one is called Trash Dance, where they worked with the folks from the sanitation department in the city of Austin. And it was the staff and their equipment, all the large trucks, that made up the evening performances. So the circumstance for the My Park, My Pool, My City project was the Aquatics Master Plan. In the city of Austin, we have a wonderful system of neighborhood pools, but the pools are 50 years old, and traditionally pools last 30 years. So across the city, the pools were just literally falling apart. And as an issue of infrastructure investment, there are, of course, disproportional impacts on communities of color, where the pools in these neighborhoods were in much greater need of care. So the city tried to address this situation through the creation of an aquatics master plan, but it was very technical and not very well received by the community. So the director of the Parks Department asked Forklift Dance Work if they would come in and do a project about the pools. And it was interesting because when we first went in and talked with the director, we asked her, what is it that you would like the artists to do? And her first answer was that, but please help us communicate what is in the Aquatics Master Plan. We created it. We tried to come up with a very logical and rational approach to how to work with the city pools, but we're not getting good feedback and we're having a hard time communicating. So to give some context about these practices in general, the work that's happening at the intersection of arts and community development, and in the larger view, these practices are as old as humankind themselves. But we have seen a growth of professional community development practices in this area, particularly over the last decade, and in many part thanks to the work of the NEA and their Creative Placemaking Initiative. What we know today through these many years of work is that the arts can be particularly effective in helping to get people to the table, to help create a compelling focal point that people can focus on, to bring forth new ideas and conversations and shift frames and preconceptions. They can help create connections with and for the community, and they have the ability to increase capacity within a community. So for this particular project, we wanted to ask how it was that Forklift Dance Works, and specifically as an arts organization, could impact civic capacity within a neighborhood. This was a moment of growth for the arts organization themselves. You know, traditionally, they worked with city staff, and over this period of 3 years, they learned to work in this unbounded field of different communities and different neighborhoods. And so for our research process, we had a 3-year embedded research cycle that was where we looked for emergent outcomes. We did participatory observation and interviews. We had community-led interviews and surveys. And I think most enjoyable was that there was a cohort of teens in the different neighborhoods who were paid both as performers and as researchers, and they helped with our interviewing. They also helped us with data sorting and meaning making, as we called it. As we saw, when we looked over the series of the 3 years, what we found was that the impacts that Forklift was creating were happening at many different levels. And so we borrowed the ecological model from the field of social work that really understands the impacts that are happening as interrelated. Because we saw impacts happening at the individual, the department, the neighborhood, and the systems level. And so for these impacts, what we saw was that, for example, on the individual level, people really began to feel a greater sense of self as a creative person. And at the department level, there was a much more greater, not only communication, but a sense of pride. These guys were out there every night performing in front of hundreds and hundreds of people, really about the work that they do. Here you can see them, they're actually flipping the tools that they use to measure the pH. In the neighborhood, we saw again the same types of results about greater communication and connection. And specifically in many of these neighborhoods, they were experiencing either early or late stage gentrification. And the co-creation of these performances enabled many people who had moved away from the neighborhoods to come back, to tell stories, and to reconnect. And what was most surprised us at the end of these 3 years was to see the impacts that happened at a systems level, at a municipal level. The Forklift performances were part of a perfect storm that brought about a $40 million aquatics bond package to help remedy the situation with the neighborhood pools, and an additional $1.2 million annually in funding that could help continue the maintenance for these pools. And so I want to bring just as we finish up, the conversation that we had with the parks director, because we asked her again at the end of the second year, what was it that Allison and Chrissy and the Forklift performers and the neighborhoods had done? What was the impact they had? And she phrased it as that the performances were able to show the decision makers why we care about what we care about. From the staff in the Parks Department, they're from the community. They work in and with the community every day, and they do their jobs because they care, and they have a deep sense of service. But when staff go to decision makers with their plans and their budgets, which are all very needed and fundamental, it is difficult to show that other dimension of the work, either the urgency by which people experience these realities on a day-to-day basis or the deep love and pride and affection they have for the places that they call home. So it was really the Forklift performances that gave the department a way to voice that and to help create the civic impacts that they were really hoping could be achieved. And so with that, I will turn it over to the next story and Kate Bukowski.
Good afternoon, folks. Can you all hear me? Okay, some folks are typing. Great. My name is Kate Bukowski, and this afternoon I'm going to talk to you about a project focused on a glassblowing studio as a catalyst for creative placemaking in a small former tobacco town in the South. I'll discuss how this effort impacted civic engagement and how the glass studio improved the community. Farmville, North Carolina has been trying to reinvent itself in an era of declining values of agricultural products, rural to urban migration, and an aging population, much like much of the rural United States. Farmville is part of the Greenville metropolitan area, a city of approximately 90,000 and the home of East Carolina University, a regional public university. The focus of Farmville's creative placemaking efforts is a public-private partnership called the Glass Station. A local group of businessmen, the Farmville Group, reached out to East Carolina University to work on reviving the town's historic downtown utilizing the arts. Like many interested in engaging the arts and revitalization, the group's initial idea was to develop an art gallery to attract art enthusiasts and regional artists. The idea evolved over time into a glassblowing studio that would enhance the academic offerings of the School of Art and Design at East Carolina and provide opportunities for the public to view hot glass work, take workshops, and purchase artwork. After a local trust acquired and renovated an historic filling station, the university purchased and installed the glassblowing equipment, opening the studio to instruction in January 2017. A Farmville group and partners from East Carolina thought that this project provided a unique opportunity to evaluate the impact of the arts, creative placemaking in a rural setting. An NEA Artworks grant generously funded a research project that brought together anthropology and economics to evaluate how the glass station impacted Farmville socially and economically. The research team includes a professor and graduate students in cultural anthropology who conducted interviews with residents. At the same time, economic data were collected with the goal of evaluating the glass studio's impact over time. Now, at the end of the research process, what have we learned about how the glass station has impacted the community of Farmville and civic engagement? The process of revitalization involves soul searching regarding identity, the attempt to forge a collective idea of where the community has been, where it is going, and what is to be done to move it in a positive direction. The glass station has been incorporated into the life of the downtown in an active capacity, playing a role in linking its community events to one another. While the glass station is an instructional art studio for East Carolina, with one faculty member and approximately 30 university students taking courses over a year, engagement through and with the arts in Farmville has grown. The things that artists and community members are participating in are broader than glassblowing classes and demonstrations. For example, there is a bluegrass event that involved a demonstration creating a guitar out of glass that drew around 200 people to the town. There was also a library event that brought students to the glass station that connected the work at the glass station to readings about butterflies. Many of the themes that emerged during conversations with residents about the glass station indicate that its benefits in many ways have a great deal of symbolic depth. Discussions surrounding the glass station engage multiple themes, many of which signify a break from Farmville's agricultural past, turning to a new, rejuvenated emphasis on the arts. The glass station has added new stimulus to an old, perhaps latent identity, bringing it to the surface and serving as a connecting hub of all kinds of artistic activity: performance, glass blowing, painting, music, dance, ironwork, and more. Although the town's identity is beginning to revolve around the arts, rarely did people talk about this development without lapsing into discussing the development of Farmville's economy. Arts activities draw new visitors and businesses to town, create shared space for artists to work, and generate community events and activities, all of which play a role in generating revenue for the community. However, few community members believe that the glass station has been successful in attracting overnight visitors, encouraging people to move to Farmville, or keeping youth in the community. By the same token, community members did not agree that the glass station was a key source in the town's revitalization or responsible for the respect the town has achieved recently. To quantify the economic impact, we examined indicators of the quality of life in Farmville. We collected data from Yelp.com in 2017 and 2019. Though these sample sizes were small, we identified some interesting outcomes. The average star rating for dining establishments in the historic downtown district increased from 2.65 to 2.92. Similarly, property value within the downtown district increased from $102,000 in 2015 to approximately $106,000 in 2019. Two overarching themes from this research project are authenticity and connection. Perhaps the most important is the glass station's contribution to the town's process of redefining its identity as a hub of arts activity. The community's perception of Farmville's new growth as the restoration of an identity as an arts hub that dates back more than 40 years is also visible within the town. More than 10 murals have been commissioned. Many of these are restored painted signs that celebrate the town's history as a tobacco and agricultural center. The focus on restoring signs is a tangible connection between the resurgence of the arts in Farmville with its past and links transformation with tradition. Further, the glass station connects East Carolina University to Farmville through a tangible physical space. The sense that the arts are intrinsic to the history and fabric of the town and authentic to its identity has perhaps spurred community members' adoption and embrace of creative placemaking and the glass station. Viewed through this lens, the arts are not an innovation, but a restoration and a connection to the town's history. The community's positive perceptions of the glass station, the growth of the visual and performing arts alongside the glass station, and residents' interest and work with the glass station indicate the positive impact of this project on the community and the community's increased civic engagement. In other words, this creative placemaking endeavor has been successful not only because it has a new glass facility, but because the arts and an arts-focused economy feel true and authentic to the community of Farmville. Thank you all for your time. I'm going to now turn over the conversation to Andrea for the question and answer session.
Thank you so much. Before we open the line for Q&A, Melissa Gouge, research analyst, will give a few brief closing remarks. So we are just trying to figure out the sound. So if you could hear me, can you let me know? But for now, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Melissa Gouge. Hi there. This is Melissa Gouge, and thank you so much to our wonderful presenters today. And I just wanted to offer a couple of thoughts as I listened to the great presentation. I'm really appreciative of Dr. Wolf's introduction and grounding us and really understanding the connections between the built and the social environment and civic engagement on community health actually having very material consequences for people. I'm very appreciative of the discussion of research that is hot off the press, just released today, and learning about the wonderful grant opportunities at the NEA. One of the themes that I think came up throughout all of our presentations were the idea of connectedness and connection. That is something that's very important to us at CNCS as well. For those of you listening, we also had a study on Senior Core, where it also demonstrated that decreasing social isolation allowed for folks to report better health outcomes over the long term being involved in volunteerism. So we have some very similar observations that we're able to make across agencies. Something that additionally came up repeatedly was strengthening communities and the lives of everyday people. I think that that is part of the reason that a lot of us do what we do every day. This has to do with some of our goals. And as we see through just two examples of these projects that are happening at a grassroots level, they're really bearing fruit on building connections between people and revitalizing communities, increasing civic engagement, things that we all care very much about. And I think that hopefully we have always got a vigorous conversation and lots of questions that are asked by our regular webinar attendees, and I think we have even more excited people that are have been brought in by the NEA this time. So I hope that all of this conversation has generated ideas for some cross-sector collaborations, perhaps, like those supported by NEA and ORE, and perhaps ignited your creativity about some connections between the role of national service and volunteerism and arts in creating vital democracy in the United States. Thank you so much, and I'll turn it over to Andrea to begin our question and answer session. So please hop in and ask anything you'd like.
Thank you. Thank you, Melissa. So thank you to all our speakers. And again, we're going to start the Q&A. So for our in-person audience, please state your name before asking your question. For our online audience, can you ask a question by typing it in the Q&A box? You can also ask a question using the microphone on your computer by selecting the raise hand feature from the menu above, and we will grant you microphone rights in the order questions come in. And again, I hope you could all hear me. So we do have a first question by Mary Alice Crofton, and this has more to do with CNCS, but I think we should think about how we are able to fund this work in general and how we convince folks that art has a place in economic development, given that you all have these wonderful examples. So she asks, in our rural state, We are very familiar with the power of the arts in helping to reinvigorate downtown districts and to create strong redevelopment foci for struggling communities. The significant challenge for those of us in the state commissions, and that's associated with CNCS, is that CNCS has failed to incorporate support for the arts as an economic development engine in AmeriCorps funding priorities or performance measures. Given this research, when can we expect CNCS to recognize the value of supporting AmeriCorps state and national applicants that want to deploy member teams in support of municipalities and nonprofits that are operating in the arts space? When can we expect CNCS reviewers to stop assuming that arts programming is not intervention that impacts disadvantaged populations? So I ask those of you who are CNCS working in state commissions or AmeriCorps state and national to answer that in the, as well, but I just want to ask our speakers, how does this start? I mean, this is part of a larger understanding of what economic development can do. So how is it that, I mean, you are obviously National Endowment of Arts, but how do communities enter into this space?
Well, I think the requester for that question, I guess I would say that, this is Sunil, that the, one of the things, for example, the Our Town program, the creative placemaking program that Patricia described, one of the things it requires is this local agency involvement. So, you know, even though it may be an arts organization or a design organization, you know, doing the heavy lifting or applying for an Our Town grant, it requires a handshake with municipality or local government. And that cross-sectoral intent is very visible throughout the program. And I think what we're seeing with the creative placemaking phenomenon, broadly described, is this very linkage between the arts and in the, really being interwoven into these other sectors. And so the Our Town program, by virtue of incentivizing it and even looking at the way we evaluate these programs, is to some extent trying to enshrine these values. But I also think that, you know, one thing to keep in mind is every state has its own state arts agency. And, you know, about 40% of the arts endowments awards go to states through a combination of formula and competitive grants. So there's a lot of work that states are doing and then trickling it down, you know, in terms of local arts agencies and arts providers. They are often increasingly thinking in a cross-sectoral, from a cross-sectoral lens. So, I mean, we can only, you know, the money, we try to make the money go as far as it can, but I think, you know, it's problematic if there are barriers at the local or state level for enabling other public agencies to engage with this work in a robust manner.
Mm-hmm. Patricia? Well, I think that, you know, part of this, I mean, not to, I am a researcher. I think it is important, I mean, Mary Alice asked an important question, but part of this is also showing impact of this work, which is what you all have been working on, and the reason why, again, we're trying to do this kind of collaborative work, because we, as researchers and CNCS, see this link with NEA. And so I think part of this is using the studies that NEA has and us being able to produce the kinds of research and evaluation that actually shows that the arts has this very important role that all the speakers have described as well. I'd also like to hear from any of you who actually, our speakers, Katie and Lynn, or other people who are online, in terms of how you have been able to provide funding for the kind of work you do, or be able to obtain that kind of funding to do that work.
This is Lynn. I can speak to the work that Forklift does. It is the Austin is very fortunate to have Forklift Dance Works as an arts organization, because they, as a more mature arts organization, they are able to fundraise for the work that they do as artists, but they always work in deep collaboration with their city partners. And so part of that is that the city will support their work in terms of the staff time, allowing them release time, sometimes overtime, for the work that they put into the project. So I think one of the important things on the funding is that it always happens in multiple from multiple sources in partnerships. And very often, as I see these projects happen, that they happen not all at once, but they develop over a number of years, and many times those partnerships evolve and funding sources evolve with the project itself.
This is Kate Bukoski, and I can add to that as well and build on what Lynn said. The partnership that became the Glass Station was really based on a relationship between the Dean of the College of Fine Arts Communication here at East Carolina University and members of the Farmville Group. So there was a deep history of trust between those folks, and it ended up that's how the initial ask came from the town of Farmville to engage the university, the college, and also the School of Art and Design. In terms of funding, what's made the Glass Station successful is that both the town of Farmville, through the trust, the families that donated the facility, and the Farmville Group, which is this group of businessmen, and then the university at the college level and the School of Art and Design level, we all have a financial stake in the success of Farmville, because the school and the college are renting the space. We purchase the equipment, but the cost of the revitalization of the space, which was over $1 million, was that burden was taken on by the town and the trust. And certainly that's a concern moving forward with the Glass Station, is how do we make this economically sustainable moving forward? Thanks.
Thank you. And here we have a couple questions. What was the name of the study that Dr. Gouge just said was released today?
Oh, that was, I'll tell you, it's actually a commentary article, but it's in the Journal of Physical Activity and Health, and it's called Creating Activity-Friendly Communities, Exploring the Intersection of Public Health and the Arts. So it has a lot of good examples, I think, of really the sort of the arts kind of affecting social determinants of health, and how that may have included programs that foster social cohesion in the arts. And it also talks from CDC's perspective, or staff perspective, which is really interesting. And this coming together is just for all of you out there to understand why we're exceedingly grateful to have Andrea and her team, people here at CNCS, help to amplify this work. This coming together of these organizations, it's very difficult to do. And at the federal level, we've certainly been trying to model that good behavior by trying to reach out to our partners. So when we struck up a relationship with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, for example, we hit on this mutually beneficial topic of looking at, they're interested in fostering physical activity and health, and they talk about walkability a lot. Well, clearly a lot of arts activities are conducive to those behaviors. And so we tried to get our hands on the kinds of studies and sources that would inform that article. So Patricia's a co-author of that article, and as is our people at CDC.
Thank you. And maybe we could type it into the chat box.
Yeah, sure.
We'll try to attempt to do that. So another question for NEA and Danielle: when is the literature review about the arts, opioids, and pain management projected to be available?
I think, Patricia, it's like the spring, I think, or spring / summer. I know that's vague. It's not even one season. It's mid-season. Will we get a date for you? We're actually in the process of we're getting the first draft back after a lot of attention to how the literature scan is conducted and the kinds of programs that were selected. There were interviews that took place. There's a technical working group which has been really vocal in helping guide the shape of the product. I think one of the things about this is, when rather than look at the arts and opioids head on, we really want to break it apart into some central components. One is substance abuse prevention and substance abuse management and relapse, and also and recovery, I should say, and also look at the nexus with pain management, because there's a lot of research about arts program, arts and pain, in pain, treating chronic or acute pain, or being used as a complementary treatment. But there's also work on sort of substance abuse, and we broke it down. We also are looking, of course, specifically at what we suspect will be a smaller number of studies related directly to arts and opioids. But we're trying to make the review, set it up by talking about these other related themes. So a lot of that work also consists of figuring out what kind of evidence are we going to admit for this report. And so a lot of discussion about what qualifies along the continuum of evidence is making the cut into this report. So we'll be sharing that with our chairman soon. And then actually, Patricia just handed me a note that I was a little too optimistic in my time frame. It's more like summer slash fall. But who knows? We could surprise you by getting it out in time for spring. We'll see.